to the KTEP Book Club on Perspectives. I'm your host, Louis Sines. And joining us on Perspectives today is Nigel Barker. Nigel is the author of the new book, Models of Influence, 50 Women Who Reset the Course of Fashion. And if you follow the fashion world, you know that he is the host of The Face, and he has been on 17 seasons of America's Next Top Model. Nigel, thank you very much for taking the time to be with us here today.
Thank you very much for having me. What a pleasure.
Thank you. Now, first of all, when I say models of influence, 50 women who reset the course of fashion, you know, people sitting at home are wondering, okay, I bet you this was one. So how did you go about setting the tone for this, choosing 50 women out of, you know, hundreds of models?
Well, exactly. Well, that's the thing. I mean, it's not an easy process. And I've been working in this business for over 20-odd years, worked with many of the greatest and most well-known models, obviously people like Tyra Banks and Naomi Campbell on both The Face and America's Next Top Model, but also models like Twiggy, Elle McPherson, Christie Brinkley, Christy Turlington, Kate Moss, Paulina Poroskova, the list goes on, and many new faces like Coco Rocher. And, you know, really this book was a tribute to many of the great women who I've worked with, but specifically how I selected the women for the book. They were models who really transcended the industry and made an impact on the world at large. And I'm talking about models like Twiggy, for example, who during the 60s, if you think about the 60s, it's not just the sexual revolution or the Beatles or the swinging 60s or whatever. A big part of it, too, is you remember the haircuts and the miniskirts and, you know, the androgyny and the protest and the rebellion, many of which was played out in fashion. And, of course, Twiggy was the face of it and was a sensation. And, you know, so we talk about the story of how that happened and when it happened and the impact it had on society at large.
Now, what about stepping back a little bit before the 60s, pinup models, because during the World War I and II, you know, pinup models, in fact, some of these gentlemen had the models painted on their aircraft and on their various vehicles they used in the military.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, we start the book in the 1940s, and really we start in the post-World War II era, partly because models really were painted, as you say, prior to that. And even on magazine covers like Vogue, women would stand and for artists who would draw them, and then that picture in the clothing would appear on the cover of Vogue. It was in the sort of late 30s, early 40s that women started to appear on the cover. And in fact, the very first woman in the book is a woman called Lisa Fonsegreves Penn, who was Irving Penn's wife. She was a Swedish model, and she was the very first model who sat for both artists and photographers. And she really became, you know, you could many people say that she was the very first supermodel because she transcended working both in high fashion couture modeling, we call it, and also, you know, sold things like washing machines, soap, and sort of drinks, which was very unusual at the time because models were very much categorized into one era or another.
And what about Dorian Lee?
Well, of course, Dorian Lee, extremely well known. I think she epitomized that sort of exemplar of glamour and elegance. And if you think about what was happening at the times, you know, dealing with the war, we were reeling from rationing. Luxury, anything, had been in short supply. And you know, we were yearning for a glamorous and more elegant time. And, you know, models like Dorian Lee were exemplars of that particular moment.
We're visiting with Nigel Barker. Nigel is the author of the new book, Models of Influence. And he's talking about the 50 women who have made an unforgettable impression on fashion, model industry, notions of beauty. And he has 8 chronological chapters also, which include spotlights on an era featuring the stories and images of those women who made their mark. As I mentioned earlier, my co-host is Norma Martinez. Norma is usually the lady who produces and engineers the show, but she is here with me today as well. Norma?
Yes, Nigel, I know that lately we're seeing in Vogue and a lot of other fashion magazines quite a diversity of models. There are many African-American models. There are many Asian models. And you were talking about Naomi Campbell, who's the host of The Face. And she is probably one of the most influential African-American models out there. But there have been not that many African-American models who made their marks.
No, absolutely. I mean, so Tyra Banks is the host of America's Next Top Model, and Naomi Campbell is the host of The Face. But two very influential African American models who I've had the opportunity to work with over many years. But you know, if you trace it back, really, it's always been very difficult for models of color, women of color. And in fact, even women of ethnicity, and one of the things we talk about in the book are these pioneering women who helped make a difference. And, you know, certainly when it comes to women of color, Naomi Sims in the 60s was really a trailblazer who in 1967 fought her way through to really, you know, getting her first cover of Women's Home Journal, which was the very first time a black woman had been seen on the cover of a national magazine in America. And she did a TV commercial for AT&T, making her the first black woman ever to be seen on national television. And it was only 1967. So, you know, up until then, it had been pretty much a whitewash. There had been the odd moment where there had been a model, Luna was one of them, in Europe. In the 50s, but very, very, very rare and never to be seen on magazine covers, you know, maybe on the inside pages, but never actually the front. So, you know, we tell their stories, and obviously, as you said, Tyra Banks, who I worked with for 17 seasons, almost a decade on television with her, was the first woman on the cover, black woman on the cover of GQ, first black woman on the cover of Sports Illustrated, and Victoria's Secret.
And it's funny, we are seeing sort of more of a crossover, because before we used to think of Victoria's Secret models as just being Victoria's Secret models. You wouldn't really see them on other runways. But now you're seeing they're now, I guess, the modern day supermodels, individuals like Karlie Kloss, who is, you can't not see her in anything. People probably know her best right now for being the best friend of Taylor Swift, and they're actually on the cover of Vogue together. She has, I guess, been one of the few to really make a crossover into, I guess, the current pop culture conversation.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, you know, these days things have changed so dramatically that we're, you know, models are being selected by social media almost as much as anything else. You know, obviously someone like Karlie Kloss, you know, very successful model, and you're right, who does both sort of Victoria's Secrets and that very sort of commercial side of modeling, but she's also moved and does very high-end sort of couture modeling. And, you know, we are seeing a huge diversity in people today, certainly on the high end. I mean, I think during, you know, in the masses of the models, which, you know, if you can think about if there is a mass of the models, it's still a bit of a whitewash, but we are seeing, you know, models of diversity, models of different shape and size, full-figured models, all the rest of it, much more than we ever used to now. And in large part, it is because of social media, and it is because of communication. And, you know, people are liking and following and supporting their favorite people and models and talent and celebrities. And then, you know, the editors and the designers can see that, you know, these various people have high social media ratings, whether it's Cara Delevingne with 15 million followers on Instagram. And, you know, they realize that that's a guaranteed market for whatever they might be selling if they put that person in an ad. And, you know, there's a reason why, you know, Anna Wintour puts Kim Kardashian and Kanye West on the cover of Vogue, because, you know, in theory, they are in vogue, and fashion has always been a mirror, really, of what's happening in society.
And American Vogue, I think, different from all the other international versions of Vogue, they tend to put pop culture figures and actresses on the cover instead of models. And I know sometimes that might rile readers, but I'm curious as to what maybe what your perspective is of that.
Well, I mean, I don't think it really riles the readers. I mean, I think actually it's because of the readers. I mean, you know, in many respects, you know, the models were always on the covers up until really the mid-90s. And then it was after the mid-90s that things really changed. And in many respects, it was because of the models that we ended up having sort of talent on the, you know, celebrities on the covers of model, of magazines. Celebrities used to be very pure actors and actresses about not wanting to endorse products and only wanting to sell their films or be considered to be very serious as far as their business was concerned. And, you know, in the early 90s, late 80s, with the huge supermodel phenomenon with the trinity of Christy Turlington, Linda Evangelista, and Naomi Campbell, and not getting out of bed for less than $10,000 a day, and, you know, the excesses and the intoxicating times that fashion represented at that moment, you know, then that bubble got burst. The whole world rolled into recession. The Japanese markets collapsed, and in came androgyny and grunge music and Kurt Cobain, and it became embarrassing to sing about or to do anything about commercialism, and really fashion mirrored that. You know, and, you know, we looked for more authentic and real people and rawness. And I guess talented actors and actresses became what we aspired to, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. think that, you know, that nowadays we're beginning to see, you know, models who are famous enough that they also are cover worthy, so to speak. And, you know, that's also mirrored across the world. It isn't just the U.S.
And Nigel, I know that many of the models that you feature in your book, some of the names that you gave there at the top of the show, Christy Turlington, and some of the many of the other models that we knew back from the 80s, people like Naomi Campbell, they still have relevance today. People are still talking about them and they're still being featured in magazines. And what is it, I think, about that time in the modeling world that makes them still so evergreen, that still makes them relevant? So many other models have come in the years afterwards, but these are the models from the 80s and 90s that we're still talking about today.
Well, I mean, it was a very special time in general in the world. So, you know, it just sort of, if you look at what was happening globally prior to that moment, you know, we didn't have the same communications as we did in, you know, when the 80s and 90s came around. It was the sort of dawn of the internet, dawn of really having, you know, reality television accessed, you know, all around the world to the different looks and different people and different types. You know, fashion itself in the 80s, you know, became much more diffused and people could have access to it. The world was much wealthier, you know, and all of a sudden designers were creating diffusion lines with denim and lingerie and accessories and fragrance and all the rest of it, and everyone could buy into it. And so, you know, those baby boomers, that particular age group, you know, we felt those were our models, that whole group. And of course, they've grown up with us, and we are now demanding to be seen as adults in magazines as well. And so at the time, they were young, they were kids, and they were sort of 18, 19, 20, and so were we, so to speak. But now, as we've all grown up, and we're now in our 30s, 40s, 50s, we're looking for women and people to represent us as we are now. And these same models, Christy Turlington, Naomi Campbell, and Linda Evangelista, and Cindy Crawford, and, you know, they're still in the press, they're still in the news. And I think, thank goodness, I mean, and that perhaps, you know, there's a talk of retouching and people being retouched too much, but it has also enabled, in many respects, when it's done the correct way and not to manipulate the way someone looks physically, but to perhaps remove a blemish, that it also helps perhaps people who are more sophisticated appear in magazines, which in the end is a healthier thing for all of us.
We're talking to Nigel Barker, and Nigel, you're talking about earlier in the show about many of the models who have really, not really thrown a wrench in, but they have sort of disrupted, I guess, maybe what standard beauty that we might think of when we think of supermodels. And namely, I think this is going back to the 90s, Alec Weck. She was a very dark-skinned African woman who hit the runways, and she was just so unconventional, but she still became a star. And I know she still is influencing a lot of African-American models today.
Well, absolutely. I mean, I think as much as androgyny and hair and chic and the waif models, you know, was a slap in the face to society after the supermodels and the sort of, you know, glamazonian, you know, beauties with big hair, you know, of the late 80s. Alec Weck, when she came along in sort of late 1990s, 1997, was an even harder slap in the face to everyone, because we thought we were, you know, avant-garde. We thought we were anti-fashion. We thought we knew what unusual looks were. But the reality is, we'd never seen a woman from Sudan with Alec Weck's look, that very, very jet dark skin, broad nose, short afro hair. You'd only ever seen women like that, unfortunately, as the face of AIDS or as the face of refugees or as the face of tragedy on television, with things like Live Aid and Band Aid. And, you know, that was the only time you ever saw that kind of face. You never saw a face like that selling couture. You never saw a face like that selling aspirational products in glossy magazines. So when Alec Weck was placed on the cover of Elle magazine by Gilles Ben-Simon, smiling and looking radiant, it caused a huge stir in the world, you know, all around the world. People were writing into Elle magazine saying, this is the most fantastic, beautiful cover I've ever seen. And it changed the face of beauty, as you mentioned. And it's people like Alec who are in my book, who are there as trailblazers, who really helped define how we see beauty to be.
We're visiting with Nigel Barker. Nigel is the author of Models of Influence, and we're going to talk about the Nigels of Influence just a minute here, Models of Influence. And I mention that because, Nigel, few people may know about this, the fact that you grew up with a model.
I did indeed. I put it this way. My mother was a model. And, you know, I grew up with, I like to say, a model in the house. My mother was a model in Sri Lanka. She's half Sri Lankan, half English. And, you know, she was very successful in her own way. It was a very tough time. Again, the 60s, as special as they were, as full of protest and rebellion, they were still very tough times for people of color and ethnicity. And my mother, who worked in Sri Lanka, suffered prejudice because she was only half Sri Lankan. She then moved to England with mother and her sister and had a relatively successful time, but also was very stereotyped, typecast. But, you know, I know that she had a profound effect on women of color and women of ethnicity and women from, you know, with Indian origins in England and around the world. I noticed as a young man watching her how hard she worked and how graceful she was and how well she dealt with rejection and, you know, and how other women, you know, of ethnicity looked up to her. And she had a profound effect on me, for sure.
Nigel, that was going to be my next question as far as what did you think of your mother, you know, being a model? Of course, in the book, you say that, you know, she was the most beautiful woman. And I'm sure that, you know, that's what everybody thought. But you as the son of this beautiful woman, how did that affect your everyday life, perhaps, you know, life with your friends, colleagues, etc.?
Well, I mean, I think we all grow up thinking our mothers are beautiful. I mean, I certainly would think, hope that we do, as I did my grandmother. And ultimately, I have written a previous book called Nigel Barker's Beauty Equation, and that specifically talks about, you know, where true beauty comes from. But I feel that someone like my mother, the influence that she had on me was much more the fact that you, as someone myself who was a mixed race, growing up in the 70s in England, in London, there were very few children that were half one thing and half another. You were either 100% or, you know, that was really the only mix there were, because people didn't mix. They started to in the 70s and 80s, and, you know, and that, of course, is much more normal. But back then it was very unusual. So, you know, I myself was dealing with my own identity crisis, so to speak, and to watch someone like my mother, who stood for that sort of South Asian, East Indian bloodline in a very public way, was refreshing and was very nice to see, because there was no one else there to look up to. And I guess that's what so many of these models, like an Iman, like an Alec Wegg, even, funnily enough, people like Janice Dickinson, who you wouldn't even think is being necessarily ethnic now, because we have such a, you know, an incredible cross-section of society represented. But back when she started, it was very tough for her too. And, you know, even people like Lauren Hutton, you know, with a gap between her teeth and a bump on her nose, found it hard to get an agent. And of course, she went on to be one of the most prolific models of all time, still modeling in her 70s now. But the gap between her teeth and the bump on her nose held her back for many years.
You just talked about, you know, perhaps having an identity crisis. And did you have ideas of the fact that you wanted to be a model or you wanted to go into the business? Because your mother enrolled you in a modeling school, if I'm correct.
No, that's absolutely correct. No, I mean, I never really had any ideas that I wanted to be a model. In fact, I, you know, went to a very good school. I had a very privileged background. My father was a successful man working in finance, and I went to an English boarding school, but I was the only child, you know, who had really any sort of color in his skin at that school. And I, you know, spent a long time, many, many years of my life being asked by students and by people I would meet on a regular basis where I was from and why did I look different. So you can't help but grow up thinking, well, why do I look different? What is different about me? And that being a question. You know, and it has an effect on a child. And, you know, and again, it didn't disrupt me to the point that I was, you know, had real issues. It was more a quest for my own, you know, search of identity. And certainly when I started modeling, which was by chance, my mother did enter me into a competition. I was meant to go to medical school, and I took a year off, 2 years off, and then I ended up permanently doing it, because what young man, given the opportunity of studying for another 10 years medicine or working with supermodels and traveling the world, would take the former opportunity? The latter certainly was much more appealing. And I, you know, ended up meeting some extraordinary people and very talented individuals. And really no one who ever asked me, where am I from? They only said to me, what can you do? And I think the fact I was being judged by my talent or my ability was refreshing. And it was certainly something that you find more frequently in the fashion business than perhaps you do in just everyday life.
Well, it looks like you are doing just what the doctor ordered. We are visiting with Nigel Barker, and he is the author of Models of Influence. And this book carries down the 50 top models, and it starts off with the golden age of modeling and talking about World War II. And I was going to talk about that with my next question, because a lot of times we think of models, fashion, cologne, everything being in Europe. But because of the World War, this put kind of a halt on it. How did that affect modeling in the 40s?
Well, I mean, obviously the war, you know, caused pretty much anything to do with luxury take a back seat, if not to it can be completely cancelled or finished altogether. I mean, you know, during the war, luxury fabrics weren't just rationed, but they were just unavailable. You know, food was rationed. You know, as a result, even though Paris was a place that, you know, didn't get bombed because they had a deal with the Nazis, they were still under occupation by the Nazis, and pretty much all the couturier houses, the big, large fashion houses, closed down. I mean, they just couldn't survive. But what happened was, by the end of the war, there was a yearning for better times. There was a yearning for, you know, a time that went back to the sort of glamorous moments, you know, and everybody, the whole world, really, not just the United States, but the whole world, needed a pick-me-up. And the fashion industry really had the sort of perfect fashion moment, because, you know, out of the ashes of the war rose a fashion industry that we'd never seen before, with technology that we'd never had before, in large part because of the war effort. Photography had, you know, really had a huge lift, because we'd used a lot of it. And photographers like Richard Avedon, one of the greatest fashion and portrait photographers of all time, actually worked as a portrait photographer in the military. And, you know, their whole, I guess, background and basis of photography came from that particular moment. And if you look at pictures from the 40s and 50s, they were those very sculptural photographs which were, you know, beyond perfect, with every, you know, pose of the model, from her neck to her fingers to her hands to her hair, nothing is out of place. And it's that, you know, archetypal no hair out of place post-war woman from the 1950s that we see in these pictures, oftentimes juxtaposed with, if it's Avedon's photographs, and De Vima with the elephants, you know, these incredible grand pictures that are just way over the top. And of course, we really never see that again. That really only ever happened in the 40s and 50s, when we were all just yearning for absolute perfection and opulence in the pictures. And, you know, by the time the 60s rolled along, you know, we had enough, and we all thought that was all rather ossified and stale.
And Nigel, I've noticed that fashion does sort of tend to go with the times. You're talking about the end of the war, but I think this maybe is more geared towards designers than it is towards models. But of course, models are sort of the instruments of the designer. But even after 9/11, you would see the runway shows were not quite as elaborate and as luxurious as they are now. And now that the economy seems to be recovering, we're seeing a lot more furs and a lot more luxury on the runway. So I'm pretty sure that you have chronicled through all your research and all through your experiences that fashion really does tend to roll with what's happening in our environment, socially, whatever type of turmoil may be happening, perhaps internationally or locally or regionally. It is reflected in the fashion that's on the runways.
It's reflected in the fashion that's on the runways. It's reflected in advertising. It's certainly reflected in, you know, in the model types and what have you. And you're absolutely right. I mean, you know, if you look at throughout the book, every era reflects really what was happening, both economically, you know, I mean, if you think about it, you know, war, religion, politics, social movements, they all affect and impact the world, you know, but it is people who breathe life into those moments. And, you know, just like world leaders and activists and entertainers, models personify and stand as symbols of the time and avatars of the zeitgeist in which they work. I mean, you know, the question is, you know, the ones who shape those moments, those are the ones who are really transcend the industry and deserve to be called the supermodel, so to speak. I mean, it's a very loosely used term these days, where, you know, everybody pretty much becomes a supermodel who works in the industry as soon as they get a cover of any kind of magazine. But, you know, I try to concentrate on the women who really made a difference and affected beauty and beauty standards.
And I know that supermodels often have a reputation. It may not necessarily be true for all of them, but I think Naomi Campbell is probably the one who set the standard for the type of reputation that many supermodels are given, whether or not they deserve it or not. But do you see that common in a lot of the models that you've encountered, or is Naomi Campbell's reputation, is it deserved? Is it undeserved? You mean you've worked with her. So what have you experienced?
First of all, I mean, with reputation, unfortunately, you know, all we ever really remember are the bad moments most of the time. And certainly the media and the press, you know, loves to make a big deal out of anyone when they slip up, especially when you slip them high. You know, when you're on a pedestal, when you are, you know, have a position that of power, if you do make a mistake, then it's obviously, you know, important that we talk about it. But it's also something that resonates with people because they like to knock someone off from a high perch, you know. But I can also say that someone like Naomi Campbell, having worked with her, is an extremely hardworking individual. And of all the models from the 80s and 90s, she's pretty much the only one who has never taken a break. She's worked all the way through those periods of time. And to be a very successful woman, you know, during certain periods of that time, just being a woman wasn't easy, let alone being a woman of color. You know, so she had to fight for many of the things that she's managed to do in her life. And, you know, those things are not easy. You know, yes, you know, has she had fiery moments? We all know she has. It's well documented and all the rest of it. But I think she owns those moments too. And it's one of the reasons why, you know, that she has a great authenticity and realness about her that photographers love and designers admire. And, you know, it's a big thing about being a success in entertainment and fashion and things like that is about having an attitude. You can't be ignored. You need to be somewhat polarizing one way or the other. And, you know, that is a refreshing element, the honesty that goes behind actually being yourself versus just being a caricature or what people want you to be.
Nigel, we want to thank you very much for taking the time to be with us here today. Our guest has been Nigel Barker. He is the author of Models of Influence, 50 Women Who Reset the Course of Fashion. This book is available, of course, online, and it's also available in Kindle edition with pictures that are in there and the great text that's there as well. I would think that you would want the actual big book itself. Nigel, is there a website that you have or that people can go and find out more about models?
Absolutely. You can visit nigelbarker.tv, and, you know, I'm actually on my book tour at the moment, so if you look under the news section, you'll see where I'll be headed, and I will be in both Austin and Houston in Texas. The book is available on amazon.com, but also all big booksellers from Barnes & Noble to Books A Million and everywhere else in between. So, you know, yeah, absolutely. Grab yourself a copy. It's a beautiful coffee table book, so, you know, it's a lovely piece to have around.
Well, once again, thank you very much for being with us. Our guest has been Nigel Barker. Nigel is the author of the new book, Models of Influence, 50 Women Who Reset the Course of Fashion. Perspectives is taped and produced at the KTP Studios, University of Texas at El Paso Communication Building. Our thanks to our engineer, Norma Martinez. My co-host has been Norma Martinez. You've been tuned to Perspectives. I'm Luis Sainz.